I think it's a very good discipline for preachers to follow the lectionary, because otherwise you can get very much into the habit of just picking a few passages that you like and concentrating on them. And the lectionary readings for this morning with Genesis and then Mark, when I was looking at them, I was thinking, well, what's the connection? And then I thought, it's the promise and it's the preparation. God makes covenants with us. And the one in Genesis was the covenant that he made with Noah and the sign of the rainbow. And he was making a new covenant when Jesus came. It was an expansion of the covenants that he'd made before, the covenant with Moses, the covenant with Noah, the covenant with Abraham, and then the covenant with Jesus covered all people, not just the Jewish people, but all people. And we're all familiar with the stories of the temptations and how Luke and Matthew go into details of what the temptations were and how Jesus resisted them. The passage in Mark is much shorter, and I think in many ways focuses on Jesus' preparation, because we have a tendency to think of Jesus being baptized and then Jesus being tempted almost as though they're separate things. But in Mark we see that they're all just one continuous thing. Because he goes to be baptized by John. So he's baptized by water. Then the Spirit comes and he's baptized with the Spirit. And then immediately he goes out into the desert to spend time alone with God. Have you noticed that Jesus spends a lot of time alone with God? We tend to nowadays have busy lives, and if we're not filling it doing something for God, we feel we're not doing it right. But Jesus spent so much time alone with God, and we need to do the same. It's a time of preparation. There is an army phrase that I'll not repeat verbatim, because the language is not too good. But basically, it says, if you don't prepare properly, you won't succeed. I think there are an awful lot of P's in the army version. But basically, it says you need to prepare. If you don't prepare, you won't succeed. And we need to do the same thing. We need to prepare ourselves. And we do that by being alone with God, by spending time alone with him. Many people do it, but it doesn't matter how much time we do it. Very often we need to do it more. You know, an odd 10 minutes here or 10 minutes there, that's not time alone with God. We need to soak in his presence. We need to spend time with him to prepare so that we can do what he calls us to do. During that time, Jesus was tempted. And that very often happens, doesn't it? When you spend time alone with God, other things intrude. But like Jesus, we have to just say no and concentrate on him. To be more like him. Isn't that the goal? He calls us brother and sister. Isn't that an awesome gift? To be brother and sister to Jesus, the Son of God. And to do what he calls us to do. There is nothing better than doing what he calls us to do, whether it's something simple, whether it's something hidden, or whether it's something fantastic. It's all his service. It's what I know I say it every time I come, it's what I love about the work with the adopted child. The fact that we get to serve God and we can see the difference that he makes in people's lives. It's just awesome. I know I use that word a lot, but when you're talking about God, what other word is there to use except awesome? He is just our Father, but he's also the creator of the universe. And he is awesome. So what I wanted to do this morning was just share a little bit more about the adopted child and bring you up to date with a few of the things that have been going on over the past year, 18 months. You know roughly what adopted child's all about. It's about being a helping hand. It's about changing the world one child at a time. We do it obviously through the Christian sponsorship program, through the Bible teaching, the food, the medical dental care. I think I get quite excited about it. So I think we're quite an exciting program, providing care for the whole person. We're working in Guatemala, and that's one of the shots off the satellites, Google Earth. So that's Guatemala City there, where we're working in the slums. And then this is around Antigua, where we have a couple of programs as well. But the other programs are all up in the high mountains here. Which is about 4 hours away from Guatemala City. And of course, we work in Albania as well, which at the moment is about yay deep in snow. That's where we started. And Mac and Peggy, they started in that caravan, started sharing their food with the kids, and then came back and set up a feeding program. And it's gone on in leaps and bounds. And the reason they did it was because the poverty level in Guatemala was horrendous. It still is. 70% live below the poverty line. 70%. It's a volcanic country. And when it does throw out dust and ash, it really does. Closes the airport. They have things like these holes that just suddenly appear in the ground, sinkholes. When it rains, it really rains, and roads disappear. And people live in abject poverty. This is Zone 5 in Guatemala City. And these are some of the buildings that they live in. That there's a young man here that I've got, Felipe Panjoch Aguilar. And he lives in a house made of wood and corn cane. That's that sort of house. And he and his whole family live there. And they have to cook outside, because if you cook inside in a cane house, pretty soon you haven't got a house, you've got a pile of ashes. That's the sort of conditions that people live in. They live in tin shacks. We're there to help the families and the children, and I know I've shown you Maria and Grandma before. To get to their place, you have to drive up the mountains, then you have to get out and walk. And their home is just a simple adobe one-room home. And they sleep in one corner, they prepare the food in another, and they cook in another corner. And the size of that house is, well, if you take from there to the first row of seats, out there and back across. That's their home. But we feed them like we do a lot of families. 49% of Guatemalan children chronically malnourished. That's the fourth highest figure in the world. But in the indigenous communities, that rises to 70%. So 7 out of 10 kids are starving. So we look after them. We provide nutritionally designed meals. The staff get in about 4 o'clock to make the meals. And then they'll make about 6,000 tortillas every day. And it helps with the growth. 44% of Guatemalan children suffer from stunted growth. 58% in the indigenous communities, that's the mountain communities. That's higher than the normal rates in Yemen and Bangladesh. Obviously, at the moment, Yemen, it's probably a lot higher because of the civil war that's going on. But generally speaking, it's higher than Yemen. And they really enjoy their food. We provide the dental care as well. That was that dental surgery there was provided by the charity shop in Market Hill in Northern Ireland, and that's it there. For those of you who know Market Hill, or if you don't, it's just a very small, and I mean small, town on the Northern Ireland border with Thera. I don't know how they've managed it, but they've raised over £350,000 in 7 years. We provide medical care. We have projects like this one, Vision 2020, which we started not last year, the year before, so that's 2016. And now we started that in Guatemala City. Basically, we tested the eyes of every child on the program. And if they needed glasses, we provided them. And we're rolling that out now to all the other programs as well. We have Project Starfish, where if kids have other needs, if they're deaf, we'll provide them hearing aids. If they need a wheelchair, we'll provide them a wheelchair. Whatever they need, we will provide. We look after the spirit, and we do that through the Bible teaching. We look after the soul with discipleship training. The disciples, then they graduate and they get a gift of a Bible, T-shirt or a scarf. Connect on a one-to-one relationship. Many of you here have that one-to-one relationship. And I know the kids have Sabino up in Chichicar. For them to get to know what his life is like compared to theirs, it's just fantastic. Try to use the money well. So 90% goes straight out to the programs. We own our own buildings, and a lot of that is actually provided for by the government. That's our government, because we use the gift aid to fund projects like that. In a lot of them now, we have what we call the refuges. So in Guatemala City, for instance, which is where we started the refuge program, it's a dangerous place for kids to be. And basically, we open the program every day so that even if they're not coming in for food, they have the opportunity to have a safe place, a haven where they can just be themselves. And those are run by what we call the collaborators. And they're all 15, 16-year-olds who volunteer, and they just help to man the programs. These were collaborators from the past. There's Wilma, and there's Pablo, and Martin there. They're now all pastors. So Wilma is pastor of the church at Tunaha. Pablo is the pastor of the new church that we set up 18 months ago in Pasajoch. And Martin is a youth pastor. But you can go out and see for yourself. You know, whether it's to Albania or whether it's to Guatemala, you can just see the difference that the program makes. Actually, that illustrates quite well the difference that we're making with nutrition. Grandma in the middle there, as you can see, she comes up to about here on me. That's fairly average for her generation. Maria, when that picture was taken, was about 11 and was already taller than her grandma. Now she stands about this tall. And it's just from nutrition. Just going to show a few baptisms now. This one I always show. I know I've shown it to you before. I think I've shown it to you every single time I've come. But for me, it just says it all. It's the first baptism in the Muslim village of Rodakal in nearly 600 years. And that village is now called the Christian village. And here are some up in the mountains, baptised in a pool up in the mountains in Guatemala. And then this was the new church, Hokatenango, where 16 new believers were baptised in the river up in the mountains. So we plant churches. This is the church in Albania at Kotadesh, a church in Hokatenango near Antigua City. And Pastor Hoch, that's the latest new plant that we've got. As you can see, already it's thriving. Because what we do is with the programs, when enough people want to come together, we'll set a church up there as well. And some community projects. We built a new playground at Shishakol. Might not seem much to us, but to the kids out there, it's like Alton Towers. You know, they get on it, and he might not be able to touch the ground on those, but he'll get up there. And do you remember those days when you used to have three or four of you on one end of a seesaw, see how many at the other end would take it? We started a new project as well, just small farming. So we bought first two cattle, and these are being, we're using our own land for this, that we had spare around the Shishakol clinic. We bought two cattle, and there's a family now looking after those cattle, and it gives them a living. We got a third cow, and now we have a bull to go with it, so hopefully we will have more cattle next season. And they're just sort of getting settled in together. We have a field that we've called the Field of Blessing. We planted that out with corn. It's providing extra food and income for three or four families. They broke the ground by hand using hose and then planted the corn and then harvested the corn. I made the mistake of going out this last September when it was harvest time. To watch them work, it's incredible because they will husk the corn. Has anyone ever done that? Where you've got the head and they just cut it off and they get a nail, 6-inch nail, put it through the top, twist it and rip it down, and out pops the head of corn. Doesn't work quite that way when I was doing it, but they can do it. We use obviously we use that as fodder for the cattle as well, and there's the corn, and then we store the corn, and then it's stripped and then used later. And then the same field, once the corn was finished, we then planted with tomatoes. So it's projects like this that we're trying to involve the communities with so that they can have self-help. And that's the plants just coming to ripeness. They're big tomatoes. Because it's about reaching people. You know, we'll use any project. Anything to reach into the lives of people so that they can see what the love of God can do. And I said it was about that deep in snow in Albania. This was taken just a couple of days ago. They look like the abominable snowmen. They've had to have the snow chains on so they can actually get the food up to the programs for the kids to eat. And that's fairly typical of a winter out in Albania. Other things that we're doing out in Albania are we're now reaching out into other villages, not with feeding programs, but with gospel outreach. So we're holding men's meetings where we started with just around a dozen or so. Now they're having to find a larger room because they're getting about 100 people at a time. They're hungry for the gospel. We're reaching out into those villages. were also involved with we raised enough money to have Christianity Explored program translated into Albanian, so that we can partner with Christianity Explored and churches out in Albania, so that they can use that to reach more people with the gift of the gospel. Because God does transform lives. I just want to share with you, I'm not sure whether I've done it before, but I just want to share with you these two young guys, Edward and Billy. They were best friends, and they actually met on the program in Zone 5, which, according to UNICEF, is the third most murderous city in the world. It's always in the top five. It has been number one. At the moment, it's number three. And as I was saying, that's Zone 5. And it just gets worse the further into it you go. Well, they accepted Jesus into their lives November 2002. And they went to be with the Lord 18th of August 2015 in a drive-by shooting. They were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's what happens in Guatemala City. There were, when we were out there 1 year, there were 5,000 deaths before the end of May. That's an awful lot of people in one city. And a lot of the kids are in that area and in danger all the time. We've got 3,000 kids like them who need their lives changing. And I know a lot of you here already help. Costs £18 a month, 60p a day. Because you can change the world, one child at a time. And I've got lots of kids up there, just like this one, who need someone to support them. And I know lots of you here already do. And for those who do, I hope if you're writing to your kids out in Guatemala that you're sending the letters up to the office and not out directly out to Guatemala, because there is no post in Guatemala at the moment. It hasn't been now for over 18 months. So we're sending the letters and parcels out via DHL. But we're still making sure that the mail gets through. So, thank you for listening.